comments, members will then have an opportunity to engage with it, to respond, and then we'll have a second bite if at all necessary. It is 20 past 2, so around about 10 to 3. We hope that you'll be done with yours so that we can engage with the presentation like we've heard it. Everybody, you could work for the whole half hour if you so wish, but if you do it before half an hour, that's also fine. If you need a few minutes after half an hour, that will also be fine, but we will continue to work towards quarter to three as a starting point. There is a PowerPoint presentation, and I'm informed that members do have a copy of the PowerPoint presentation. Thank you very much. Can we hand over to you then, TG?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, for the opportunity of allowing us a presentation. We have submitted a presentation. I'll walk through that quickly just now. Also try and attempt to clarify and probably respond to some of the issues that have been tabled here as a matter of discussion. I think without presuming to be giving any kind of guidance to the committee, I think it's important to say, just talking to the other colleague, political parties, that our attitude from where we deal with this matter is not from a partisan point of view. It's from a point of saying this is an issue that's arisen and its time has come for us to start applying our minds in terms of what the best framework we can create for party political funding and support for democracy in the country. And it is also important to say we may not get everything right on the first go, that maybe in another couple of years with changing environment we might also be forced to relook at this legislation because situations evolve and situations change. We move on this matter from a public expectation that this area of party political funding does need every now and again to be regulated in a way that creates a degree of comfort from the point of view of the public and the voters that there is no undue influence to political parties in their policy-making processes, but also that there is an effort to stamp out any corruption that could be associated with this area of party political funding, particularly as it relates to private donations. It's an issue that has arisen over quite a while and a few times over to appear in court to deal with this. And our attitude in the last court appearance was that the court matter was actually premature. We needed to sit down and go through this discussion. And our attitude as well is that we need a balanced a regime that is quite balanced in terms of ensuring that the authority over the parties remain the voters essentially, and that private donations are essential in augmenting the resources of the different political parties. But we need to protect the parties from undue influence from private donors in a manner that always makes it clear that the policy-making processes are actually essential in the hands of the electorate that each party serves. And so the approach we've taken is precisely from that point of view. We've also tried to look at it as a balanced offering in terms of what we must be willing to give over for public accountability in terms of regulations and transparency, at the same time balance that up with the improvement in the quantum of the party political funding as provided by the fiscus. And we think that it's always going to be a debate we will have, but somewhere along the line, that's where the balance should lie, and it should not be a balance that we view only on the basis that one party is likely to benefit, but more on the basis of what might be the best to create a regime for the country to protect its democracy. There are different regimes from various countries, and ours will obviously be different, and the difference is going to be based on how far were able to negotiate and try and take care of the concerns of the public. On the other hand, I also believe it's important to go this route to protect the political parties. We have come across interesting circumstances where there are not only allegations of corruption, but also the whole issue around state capture. Some of these tend to create a general impression where there's mistrust as to, is there integrity in the fundraising program of political parties. And this, I think somebody mentioned this, as an issue that will inevitably arise with various parties because, ruling party is not only national, but ruling party could be a number of different areas where different parties might be having influence. And so an accusation can equally be made at any different level. I think we may not be able to close that issue completely, but what would be important is to be able to say that the framework we have tries to make as much of transparency and balancing it with accountability. Now, we have already made a submission, and if you look at the presentation, largely that presentation is on that document, and so we're focusing on three aspects: public funding, regulation of private finance, and then lastly, political party transparency. Excuse me. So you will see that part of that is just a bit of background, although those figures may be a bit inaccurate because I think that we gave an old slide, but there is already quite a graduated distribution which is based on the current formula. Again, we made comment about the historical evolution of the funding in terms of the changing quantums, but our focus is that there's a broad menu of issues where political party funding tends to be in need, and so this deals with party operational expenditures, election campaign related expenditures, education activity, educational activities and institution, voter education, political education, citizenship education, policy development and dissemination, parliamentary activities, and all of these are broadly the areas where parties tend to spend most of their funds. We have also tried to comment on the different approaches that South Africa and other countries in the world have approached this issue of funding, and our contention has been that there's less regulation in South Africa, and we probably we need to correct that because it's an issue that's going to catch up with us over the next few years. Now, we've also looked at a number of countries in terms of what happens there, because that's an example that's been put there. I'll comment on it specifically when I get to the end of it. The next issue deals with the question of putting in the kind of a regulatory framework for political party funding, and then of course here we're looking at financial transparency, which the two together need to be what we are offering as political parties in lieu of more enhanced support from the fiscus. And here we're also dealing with the issues around the need for disclosure, and again, I think it's not something that we can be hard and fast about, but these are issues where we need to look at what's the best balance that we are able to create to be able to ensure that there is a degree of accountability that's associated with the party funding. The issue of financial transparency, at the moment, I think all of us are familiar with the normal accounting process, which all parties are subjected to, which we believe is quite adequate, and it's actually quite an important issue. I will deal with a bit later with the issue of investments, party-linked vehicles, because I think a lot of changes have come about which are going to be interesting to look at. Together as parties, we need to look at those issues. That, of course, enhanced public funding, the amounts that we are receiving from the point of view of the fiscus would need to be increased quite reasonably to be able to balance for the fact that the private donations will be obviously impacted upon by these rules in a way that whilst the rules will be necessary, but it's important for us to be able to keep that kind of balance. And I also think this point becomes important, particularly at the point of the transition, because you have to be able to clearly time the two. The point at which the regulations are promulgated and the point at which party funding increase happens, they've got to be properly aligned, otherwise one affects the other one negatively. So those issues are already covered in the presentation. I will just indicate as well that we believe that the IEC has been fairly efficient as the custodian of the funds for the party political funding, and I think other than just ensuring that the capacity is improved, we feel that they remain the most appropriate for the purposes of overseeing this fund. I think the current arrangements and also the whatever level of oversight Parliament is able to deal with on this matter also remains important. It's not something that we are proposing any new changes on. So we also argue that the issue of party funding is more about strengthening democracy and ensuring that the parties literally rely more on the public funding more than they rely on private funding. And that's a question of the balance as to who really controls the parties. Is it private donors or is it the voters? And I think that's the point that we're trying to make. All of these issues have been largely presented on the document, and one does not wish to go into any more details. I would want to just go on to comment on a few additional points which I think are going to be important. Now, that aspect are just comments that are not part of the presentation that you've got. So when we look at this democracy fund, whether we call it National Democracy Fund or whether we call it Multi-Party Democracy Fund, that's neither here nor there, we're seeing this as largely financed from the fiscus. Then the proposal here is about increasing the amount. But linked to that is the corporate donations, wherein there's been quite a lot of discussion here about the private sector making a contribution to a central fund, and this is the one I'm talking about. We believe that this is appropriate. I've heard some of the members arguing that what if the parties do not wish to fund in a common pool? Sorry? Thank you, DA, for your correction. If the donors dislike certain parties and don't wish to contribute into that particular fund, that's not the issue. The issue is that you can donate to the group, to the central fund, which is what this is providing for. This is more for those who do not wish to be only associated with some specific parties. But this is about saying, we need to go out to BUSA, BLSA, and say, guys, you're all benefiting from this democracy. It's also for your benefit. Put as much money here. Go and measure a percentage of what the fiscus is doing. And I think we need to go all out and encourage them to put the money in there. It helps here because then there's no stigma associated with any particular party. And those who don't want to be associated with the African National Congress or the Democratic Alliance and don't want therefore to put and make to run the risk of some part of that going to those parties, it's fine. They can go straight to the party. So at the moment, this is what we're talking about. But here, we believe that it's important and fair that those corporate donors should be known and they must just be put up there. And the point is not so much that there's anything wrong with it. It's to also say there's nothing wrong with donating to parties. And that, for me, is an important issue. And all the same provisions as what we are doing today, we don't see that as a problem. The second aspect is what we are talking about is private party political donation, which goes straight to the party. Now that, of course, is a bit different. And here, we are actually saying these are the areas we must tease out. We need to continue to allow private donations to parties. However, if it is all subject to an increased party funding from the fiscus, then we could consider the issue of disclosures in the sense that those who donate for a particular party, I don't buy the fear. I think that it's important to say we can't do that. I think for the first few months or years, people might be fearful, but later on we'll get used to it, and I think we must just adjust onto that discomfort. So disclosure of donors is something that you need to put up there. Then, of course, we can consider here as well the issue of capping the private sources as a proportion of the total, and this is where I think we need to discuss a little bit, because the question I'm asking myself is whether if we're going to be increasing funding from the fiscus, we then need to be able to say that there should be a certain portion of the party's revenue that should come from private. It needs not be all equal to what is coming from the private from the public purse, simply because already quite a lot is being shouldered by the public public purse. But also to ensure that the public is a major source, and that's how to protect undue private donor influence. And that's why I'm saying we would be willing to consider a discussion on the percentage, on capping on the total party revenue. Someone made numbers, I had someone talking about 10,000, others 100,000. I think absolute amounts would be unworkable in a law, so you need to talk of it more in terms of percentages. Now, when we talk about considering capping or threshold, we're imagining a situation where a party receives 100% of its funds from just one donor. That offers a particular risk for a particular party that you've now got, you know, almost a kind of stranglehold. Not that we assume, bad faith on the basis of the part of the donors, but that looks quite uncomfortable. And so that's why we're talking about that there has to be some kind of understanding as to you can donate up to so much percentage of what the party's revenue, but not necessarily 100%, and therefore that's why one is raising that issue. The next issue, of course, is that there's membership subscription programs. Those for us are very different. We mustn't confuse ourselves with the subscription programs of parties, so that we don't have to disclose, you know, Mr. Self has donated 100 rand to the DA, William Kize 50 rand to the ANC. You're going to have a long list there. So I think we must kind of separate those two. Then there are interesting areas which are, I think this is where we should all be discussing. And my point is not, I think my point is that what would it do to our system if we don't deal with this issue? And in this case, this is an area of prohibitions. For us, the African National Congress, there's no such a thing as an anonymous donor. We don't accept it, and it should not happen to any political party whatsoever. You should know who's giving you money. That's it. You can't have money. Here's a bag of money. We don't know where it came from. The owner didn't say, said you mustn't expose who they are. Can't have that, and I think it's a fair thing. Then when it comes to the democracy fact, again, here again, you cannot allow an anonymous donor. What you can allow is a discretionary publication of the identity of a donor who would be known by those who are in the authority that is, presiding over the fund. So if Zwelin Mkhize comes and makes a donation to the, Central Democracy Fund, but listen, for these reasons, I got this money from my kids. I don't want them to know I've put the money here, but I'm committed to this thing. So don't publish my name, but you know who I am. Then it's not anonymous. It's actually probably discretionary disclosure. To me, it's a bit of a different thing, because I'm imagining a situation where Somebody comes in and says, here's a bag of money. We don't know where the money came from. If one day it gets exposed to us that actually that money came from a bank heist, then we've got a problem. This is, I'm exaggerating the point simply just to make a particular point that disclosure should not be a problem if somebody is making a donation. What is the problem when no one knows where the money comes from. I think that really puts a risk on all of us. So that is, for me, the point that you must focus on. So if there's discretionary disclosure, but somebody knows who gave the money, then it's fine. We don't accept money that we don't know who it came from. We will have to know. Doesn't mean everybody knows, but there are those who have got the responsibility to know that. Another point which I make here as a general principle, it might sound unnecessary, but because we've been hit many times, we make this point all the time to be very public, that donations to political parties must be non-transactional and they must be unconditional. So there can't be a condition that is linked to a party, a donation to a party. Now we've seen here instances where donors have actually dictated certain terms to particular political parties to how they must behave and how they must associate. We think it's not appropriate. Then on foreign funding, again, I think we must discuss this one. As far as the ANC is concerned, donations from foreign governments must be a no-no, must be prohibited. Donations from foreign political parties, we don't see why. We think no-no. Then donations from intelligence or quasi-intelligence organizations, I'm sure we all agree there. Then donations from foreign corporate and private individuals, then again I think we need to have an understanding of some capping there we can consider and some disclosure as well. And the reason why this point has to also to be raised is that, again, if you have a party that's got 100% of its funds or as much of its funds coming from one corporate foreign donor, somewhere along the line, the question again arises as to what is the level of influence of the foreign donor onto the party policy-making processes. So the question is where we can cap it is something that we're saying, I think we must discuss that, because it's all about saying the political parties here are about the influence of our own voters and our own people, so there must be some kind of protection. The other point that has been raised, which I thought was interesting, is the issue of donations to individual leaders within a political party. We think that needs to be outlawed if you want, too much sponsorship of each individual leader inside a party. It doesn't sound quite clear. Here we're talking about largely donating to parties because it's a party proportional representation, and that's what we're focusing upon. We're ready to engage on that. We won't overstate the point. I think some of the issues there might seem like repetitions. There was a comment about about restriction as to where the parties spend their funds. I think it's not reasonable because it basically interferes with internal party operations. I was in one of the meetings where some members were saying, why do you buy t-shirts, why do you do billboards and so on. I'm sure there's a few parties here who will understand that you can't now tell us we can't do this, you can't do that. There's an issue of party strategy, whether it works or not is up to our own risk. So I think we need to leave it to that. Then, of course, there's this issue about prejudice to disclosed donors. Now, here, I think we need to talk openly. You see, we've always been accused as a ruling party that we intimidate members. Well, I've never really heard someone say, here is a case of such a need. And somehow, as far as we're concerned, we're taking quite a bit of politicking. That's how it happens. But because we don't have the evidence, let us put the point this way, that should there be such an instance or such instances, can this committee consider mechanisms of either being able to get this matter, such a matter reported, and also some countermeasures on that, so that we can put it out there to say in case it happens, This is how you report it. In case it happens, this is how we correct it. Then we don't start throwing issues at each other, because when sometimes this happens, it always comes as a kind of a counter-accusation. And yet, sometimes the accusation comes from people who get donations from parties that, whether they've got government contracts or not, those kinds of donors are not even donating to the ANC in the first instance. And so there's no such a thing as to say, why did you run away from this party to go and donate to that party? So I think we need to make that issue open so that we don't make it an area of accusation. So I would not argue that I've seen such an instance. I would only argue that if there is such an instance, let's get a mechanism to deal with this issue. Somebody spoke about splitting the donor into holding companies and subsidiaries and so on. I'm not sure how much difference that makes. Seems to me it's a bit of splitting of hairs. If the company has identified itself and has having donated, I think it's fine. And then if it's another subsidiary has also donated, I don't see that as a big issue. But nevertheless, because it was raised, I'm just making a comment. The area again that I believe we need to discuss, because it's actually quite an interesting area. I think our considered view is to disallow direct party political investments. The issue here of direct party shareholding, these issues have arisen quite frequently. The reason why we're saying this is because there are currently a number of legislation that are going to make this area a little bit more tepid. Firstly, there's something that is called political exposed persons. Now, that issue tends to affect anyone that has got any kind of degree of association with political party leadership. It will obviously compromise anything that we're trying to do on the side of investment. It doesn't matter which party. Somewhere along the line, it's going to ultimately become an issue. So I think we may as well be aware that this is the law that we have passed, and that definition is going to cause a bit of a problem. FICA is out there again. It's going to identify as very risky some of the operations that seem to be associated with party political prominence. And this, again, is something that I think we need to be aware, because they would probably tend to try and sequestrate such investment. It doesn't matter which party they would have come from. So I think we need to look at it. The other one, which is big, is the Foreign Corrupt Practice Act. Now, again, the U.S. will go for a partner in South Africa who's linked to a political party that is part of a network of investments that linked to, you know, a dollar-based exchange, or that are linked to American companies. And they'll come for the person even if you're not trading in America, even if you're not actually yourself corrupt. And so we've actually had examples of this. So this is something that I think we need to be aware. So when we talk about broadly just party political investment, I think it's safe for all of us as parties to kind of clear away from that part. However, we do need a guide, because there are concrete situations. Now, if the EFF has had a donation from a number of donors and they've got a huge 1 billion rand and they want to keep it safe, there must be a way of how do you keep that safe, where it's a trust, blind trust, is it going to be an endowment fund, and so on. So it should be possible for us to work out a mechanism that protects that kind of savings. If you've got, you know, ANC members making a contribution, and then that money is secured because that money is slowly accumulating and you want to save it somewhere, how do you deal with those savings? Those are practical things that you must look at. If you're dealing with a property, lots of us here have got buildings that we own as parties, so how do you manage that? Now, you decide to downscale and only use one office and the rest of the 12 floors are open and people are willing to use this. How do you deal with that? Is this the same as doing business or not? Of course it is, but there are things which are practical. So our point is that there is a degree that you must obviously not allow. For example, you couldn't have a trading company that's going to be dealing with government programs and tenders and so on. I think there's been lots of fingers bent on that front, and people must know it's something that we would want to take that particular approach. And then, of course, ANC supports the current formula. We're not opposed to a reasonable negotiation between parties that, look, maybe let's shift it a little bit here and there, but 50-50 split, I think, is a distortion of a democratic outcome, and I don't think we need to follow that kind of direction. The other issue that the legislation needs to cover both national and provincial level, and then we must sort out the constitutionality of the funding in the provinces, because that we need to just clear that. And then local government, I believe it needs a little bit more of studying and a bit more of proposals to create a model that is suitable. It looks to me it will clutter this process pretty much in a way that won't be able to resolve one aspect. Let's clear this one at national and provincial, and then later look at what we do with the local government. I may have gone a bit beyond, but those are the comments we'd like to make. Thank you very much, Chairperson and honourable members.
Thank you very much, TG. Once members are thinking, let me kickstart. You at some point spoke about the need for transition. In other words, at the point that this legislation is enacted and the point where we say to donors or anybody else, now we start and now we stop, and you were saying that is because there's going to have to be an adjustment from parties and so on. What is it you're thinking of? I'm raising it because in one of our meetings somebody asked the question, if we make this legislation, or if it's passed, enacted, I think is the correct word, shortly after November when we take it to the National Assembly, when do we want to see it in operation, because it has budget implications? And I think that we're way beyond the budget process, I think, for the next cycle or so. So when you talk about this transition, is that what you're talking about? What is the ANC's view? Is this something that kicks into effect for the 2019 elections? Does it kick into effect for the 2024 elections or the local government elections post 2019? So if you could just elaborate on this transition regulation alignment that you spoke about. Any other takers, honourable members? Prof. Kubisa, Honourable Sal, Singh, Honourable Mulda, Honourable Dlamini, Honourable Bongo. We will take all those questions Honourable Mateus. We'll take those questions in one batch. If you could take notes, TG. And members will then have a second bite if they need clarity or a further question. Can an Honourable Maseko? All right. Honourable Prof. Kubisa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just also welcome the presentation by Dr. Mkhize. Just a few questions from my side. I know, Chairperson, that the presentation cuts across other presentations that we've had with regard to issues of transparency, openness, and also the aim being to deal with true influence and corruption, etc. But of course, it goes on to add other issues as have been presented by Dr. Mkhize, which are not necessarily covered in the slides. Having said that, Chairperson Kabazela, I see that you speak about the fact that all funds have got to be transparent, have got to be declared, and I would just want to take on funds that perhaps parties get through dinners, events, etc., because you'll find individuals donating there, not only to one party, because parties from time to time will hold these events, and most of these events are held just at the penultimate and just before the election, on the verge of the elections. And sometimes there are individuals out there who will associate with the ideology, the philosophy, the vision, the mission, and objectives of the party. And hence, they will donate some sums of money. It could be business people, entrepreneurs, and it could be corporate executives, etc. And I just want to find out as to how you think these should be declared. And based on the understanding that you've spoken about the issue of the central fund, and also funds that can be donated to parties as well. That is the first one. And the second one, which is the last one, Chairperson, I think you are on page 6, and where you talk about enhanced funding. You say, given the current fiscal constraint, increased funding for political parties would imply a shift in resources from other important public priorities. You know, and you talk about items like education, social welfare, and health that could be sacrificed. And I would wish that you talk on that one as well, just to expand on that one. Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, the Honourable Self.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much. I just want to make absolutely certain that I understand, Dr. McKeeser, that this document that that has been tabled here is a discussion document. It's not doesn't represent the official policy of the ANC. Secondly, I'd be very interested in his views on what we traversed earlier, and that is at the same time as there is limitations or disclosure or regulation of some form of private donations, there's equally so a restriction on the abuse of state resources during election period. Because as you well know, there are occasions where the distinction between party and state gets blurred. I'd also like to ask him whether, in view of the fact that the IEC fund has not received a cent of private donations in the 20 years that it's been in existence, why would donors all of a sudden want to donate to it? And finally, I associate myself with the comment that was made previously, that if we want to, as you proposed, change the balance between private and public funding, and in view of the fact that I understood from media reports that the ANC campaign costs in the local government election costs in excess of R1 billion, we're going to be looking at quite a considerable injection of funds into the fund in order to compensate for donations which are no longer going to be made privately, and whether that is appropriate in the economic circumstances in which we find ourselves, when there's so many pressing needs and so many desperately poor people. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. The Honourable Singh.
Thank you, Chairperson. Kavazela. Good afternoon, and thank you for the presentation. Under current distribution formula, I think the ANC makes a categoric statement there. 50-50 split is a distortion of democracy. It categorically states it. What is not a distortion of democracy in the view of the ANC? So that's my first question. Secondly, I think you, in some presentations that we've received before you, there's also been proposals of complete ban on funding from investment vehicles that parties have. And I see in some way you're also saying that you should disallow that. Now, it is common knowledge that some political parties do have investment vehicles long before the advent of democracy, and they do get dividends from there. And you also spoke about buildings, rentals, income, etc., etc. Now, how fixated are you on this notion that any income or any donation from investment vehicles should be disallowed completely? That's my second one. Thirdly, in the presentation you talk about parties not represented, and we had the president of ASAPO speak to this early on. But you say the current framework also does not accommodate independent candidates who are not linked to established parties or new parties that are not currently represented in parliament. What kind of thinking has evolved within the ANC to accommodate parties that are not represented in parliament or these independent candidates?
Thank you very much. The Honourable Mona.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to start off by thanking Dr. Mkhize for the presentation. I want to continue where my colleague Mr. Singh left off with regard to the formula. Now, obviously different parties may have different views on that. I can think that some party may say, well, we would prefer 100% to be equitable. Other party may say that we prefer 100% to be proportional. But if we say that the current position is that 90% is proportional and 10% is equitable, I would argue that that is not in line with the underlying principle of a provision in the Constitution that says the enhancement of multi-party democracy. It's exactly the opposite. So if you look at the Constitution itself, and that is where we start off with the whole process, Section 236 does not make any distinction between equitable and proportional. And that's why people tend to say, well, then it needs to be 50-50, because prevent the distortion when it comes to other funds, constituency allowances, party political funds from Parliament, that is 100% proportional, which exactly accommodates the election result and does not distort the democracy. But the underlying principle in 236 is to enhance multi-party democracy. And I would like to try and understand, as Mr. Singh pointed out, how can it be a distortion if the Constitution in 236 clearly indicates equitable and proportional. It does not have a preference for either, because the underlying principle is to enhance multi-party democracy. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Lamin.
Thanks, Chairperson. I just need clarity before I go forward with my question from Mr. Mkhize. On slide 14, on what Honourable Kubisa was writing, I'm going to read this line as it is. Given that the party funding is a recurrent item, it would not make sense to fund such expenditure by increased borrowing. As such, other items of recurrent spending, like education, social welfare, or health spending, would be alternative uses of the available funds. Does this mean, in simple English, maybe my English is not at that level, does it mean that you are proposing that the public funding that will assist in terms of increasing the political funding, from the fiscal, you might not go the borrowing way? You're suggesting that we can take some of the money from the education, welfare, and health. Is that the suggestion, so that I can ask? Is that the proposal?
No, that's not the proposal.
Okay.
This is a debate to say we are conscious of the challenges that we face. And therefore, when we deal with this matter, we must understand that in a number of instances, to raise money, we might need to borrow, and that on the other side, there are competing needs such as education and so on. I can deal with that a bit later.
Okay. No, I wanted to get that one, because I was going to think seriousness. Nevertheless, the issue of increased political funding, I don't know why the ANC, as a ruling party, will come to Parliament and ask that we must take more money and give it to politicians, when themselves as a ruling party have said that we don't have enough money from the fiscals to be able to meet all the challenges that this country is facing. So I don't know what kind of thinking is that you even be brave to come to Parliament and say, let's take money that we don't have, that each and every minister, including the president, everyone else from the ANC, said we don't have enough money. But you come to Parliament and say, let's take money from the public and give it to politicians. I think it's a madness of the highest level.
of people to come and do that. I don't know what is wrong with the ANC as a party, because if that is the party thinking, then we've got more problems than we thought we have. But also in the issues, you're talking of some anonymous donors. I don't know when did that start. Is it because now the ANC is accepting that it's losing power, then they realize that there won't be any anonymous donors? Because we know for a fact that you've been using these donors and secretly, and no one knows about them. But unfortunately, that because your donors are not that smart. Some of them we know, like the Guptas, that they paid for a conference in 2012. And I can challenge you now that if you want to dispute that, you are in parliament. You can't lie in parliament. I can prove it to you. And if you want to dispute the fact that Guptas paid for a conference, I can take you on that one. But just be careful that it's a criminal offense to lie in parliament. But because that is the issue that we don't get here. That why all of a sudden we want to talk to these issues, but the thinking that you want to take money off the state and give it to the politician is wrong. That must never be allowed. Political parties, they must go and get their own funding. We agree on the transparency. There must be transparency. We must know where the money is coming from. And it's something that we've been saying to the ANC for a very long time, that there must be transparency in terms of those funders. Now that you are realizing that you are moving out of power, you're starting to move to that direction. But before you can do that, if you are genuine and honest, you would have said from your own discussion document that from us as the ANC, this is how we survived with this kind of funding, the secret and anonymous donors and everyone else, so that at least we can see that you are genuine. It's not an issue of realizing that there are issues. When it comes to the issues of individual leaders getting private funding, I think those are your internal political issues that you want to bring to us. If you suspect those people, you must deal with those issues there. Here we want to tell you straight that the issues of proposing that we must take the money from the public, from the state, and give it to politicians is wrong. It must never be allowed, especially with the current economic situation that we're facing as a country. It's wrong. It's something that it must never be accepted. Thank you, Chair.
Hi, thank you very much, Honourable Dlamini. Honourable Bongo.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. And thank you, TG, for the superior presentation. I think gauging all the presentation that we have taken, it would appear that we have put a lot of thought in this presentation. My understanding, Chairperson, is that we're engaging in this exercise for three reasons in the main, as opposed to what the last speaker has said: to enhance transparency, enhance and deepen democracy, and deal with issues of accountability of the funding of political parties. I think that is the backdrop against which we are entering this matter. And it's not true that the ANC is losing power. Chichi, in your presentation, I want you to share with us what benchmark have you made in terms of this presentation with regard to other countries in the African continent. And secondly, I want you to share your views around the issue of 90 proportional and the 10 equity. What will be your concrete view around those issues? Number three, you raise issues relating to capping. If you were to make a suggestion to the committee, what is, share your ideas around the capping. How much can it be a ceiling in terms of the percentages? And lastly, I would want your views on those after we pass the legislation transgresses. What do you think we may have to put in as the sanctions for the transgressors of the legislation that we would have put in place? Thank you very much.
Honourable Matthias.
Thank you, Chairperson. The issue about provinces not or acting outside or may be acting outside the constitution in terms of providing funding to political parties, when did the ANC stumble upon this? Because that means the DA and the ANC has been doing this since their inception of parliament in over 24 years. So for 24 years, something has been happening in our country that has been unconstitutional. That's extremely bothering. Or is this speaking to the fact that the ANC knows it's losing provinces next come 2019, so we want to eliminate the provincial funding from the legislatures so it remains a national, the funding or public funding remains national. So I'd like you to speak to that because I find it rather strange that all of a sudden it's discovered that there's been unconstitutional things that are going on. Given that the ANC is losing power, and we do know this, and it's evident in the by-election results. I mean, it's been consistent. The by-elections are going on monthly, and the ANC's results are consistently, the votes are much lower than previous 2016 results. And this is also taken into account, the slow turnout of that. You didn't speak much on the issue of investment arms and them doing business with government. So I'd like you to speak to that and what regulations should happen around there. You did say, and I do understand, that money should be invested, but to what extent and where does it cut off with the state? Corporate donations. You mentioned that corporations should have the option of, if they want to donate to the multi-party fund, fine. If they don't agree with a particular party or they want to fund a political party, they can do so directly. I raised this with the previous group that submitted. Is that how does a corporate, and how do we know, how do corporates come to that decision on which political party to raise? What's your input on that? And this is also given that how do executives make those decisions, given that there are workers involved in companies, there's shareholders, etc. My colleague has spoken on the issue of using funding and requesting additional funding, which is largely shocking. And I'd like to speak to the contradictions, because you're saying there shouldn't be personal funding, funding for politicians, right? And it should be given to the political parties. But in the same breath, you're saying that corporations should be given the options on whether they want to support a multi-party democracy, so they fund to the fund, right? Or you're saying if they want to fund a political party, they should have an option to do so. And that was my understanding on what you were saying. So, and when I say I'm contradicting that, because you're saying that they shouldn't be allowed to fund particular politicians in a party. So there might be someone who might not necessarily support the entire party, but they want to support someone in that party. So I want you to speak to that contradiction. Thank you.
Honourable Maseko, followed by Honourable Gumede.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Some of the input you can just say if the shoe fits. So worried. I think the issue of this bill that we're dealing with is to harmonize and regulate what we believe has been some imbalances, and to ensure that every party that is represented in parliament or in legislatures benefits for this party funding that is deliberated upon in a multi-party forum. And it is the advert called for any person or any organization or any association to come and make a presentation. As to some parties didn't take the opportunity, we shouldn't penalize the other parties like the ASAPO and ANC who came to make their presentation. I think the issue of party funding is not isolated, it's not new to South African Parliament. It is a global phenomenon. It is where all democracies and emerging democracies are looking at to ensure, as I said, harmonizing and regulating funding, donations, and also to put in penalties for aggression and non-compliance. So I think for us, for me, I see this bill as empowering every party. It is empowering every party. Well, I'm sure issues are raised about Guptas and what have you. You know, can similarly raise issues about some parties that goes abroad, meeting some business people and stuff like that. But this bill is to harmonize, is to regulate issues of transparency, of accountability, and good governance. I had wanted to ask Dr. Mkhize to elaborate on the issue of capping. And one would congratulate the ANC for coming out and presenting a well-researched document to the committee on the issue of capping and probably also re-emphasis on the issues of party membership that he spoke about. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Gumede.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. And thank you very much, Honorable Kabanzela, for a very, very humble, open, constructive presentation. It is indeed profound, well researched, and well thought through presentation. It takes the concerns of the public out there and says, with 24 years of governing, now we realize what is a global problem. Other democracies have tried to solve this problem. We have researched, we have looked at other models, you have looked at other case studies. And you say out there, the public is always concerned because it knows that he who pays the piper plays the tune. So the public is always concerned of that when private funding is alleged to be given to any party. And therefore, to allay fears, to allay concerns, and to make everyone happy in the public, you say, let us all, as the brains of South Africa, come together and look at these concerns, and look at private funding, and look at our past, and see how we solve these concerns, how we allay these fears, how we solve South African problems. And then, indeed, everyone who has been making a contribution has been taking that approach, and I thank everyone among us that has taken that approach. This is a common problem. We own this democracy. We own this parliament. We owe it to the public to say, here, this is how we use funds we receive, and therefore we are not influenced private funding, whether we look at the energy problems of the future or whatever. And therefore, really we support the issue of regulation because it solves that problem. The issue of increased public funding, if and when we can afford it, and an equitable distribution according to the stakeholders of the country in as far as public governance is concerned. Thank you very much, Honorable Dr. Mkhize, for a well thought presentation.
It's going to be a tall order, TJ, but in the spirit of consistency, I've asked everybody to try and put it into 10 minutes. I know it's going to be a tall order, but let me be consistent. Are you able to respond to these things in 10 minutes? You'll have a second bite, because members might have a second bite if they so wish, but if at all possible, your first bite will be 10 minutes. We'll open it up to members, and then you'll have a second bite if necessary.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would have imagined that with the numbers of part of members who have shown interest, you would probably give me a bit of injury time. I'm not likely to get injured. Now, I'll rattle through a few of these issues, and I will ask my colleague, Comrade Wale Musa, to also just add a few. But because you are confining me to 10 minutes, be aware that I may not elaborate that deeply on the issue. So on the issue of when can we deal with this, when can we do it, as far as I'm concerned, it's possible to do it, pass it in November and start implementing it, so we can talk about that. So when we look at it, we're not saying that it is something that can only happen in 30 years' time. We're saying it can be done quicker. Secondly, the issue raised by Prof. Kubisa, those who come to dinners, they basically belong to the group of party donations to a political party, so they could be part of a comprehensive declaration at the time they do that. The question of sacrifice, I didn't respond to Mr. Dlamini. Just to give an example, in some countries, actually, they use lottery fund to top up party funding, and there are many formulas that you can think about. The issue of a discussion document and ANC policy document, I think we are splitting heads, Honorable Self. This has come from the ANC, so let's accept that this is the ANC. The issue of abuse of state resources has got nothing to do with this. It's got to do with the fact that with or without party funding, that issue needs to be faced. There shouldn't be abuse of state resources with or without elections, and that issue needs to be faced as such, and so we wouldn't like to contaminate this one. Then your question is why people have not given money all along to the IEC. Why now? Well, firstly, nobody actually asked them to do that. Secondly, I used to tell one of your past leaders that your party and some others should thank the ANC for raising funds for them, because sometimes we go out and raise money from a particular corporate donor, then they say, how do you do this? We say, no, give it to all the parties. And sometimes you'll find funds flowing to your party simply because we have been open to say, don't have to restrict yourself to the ANC. You can offer to the rest. The formula is there in Parliament, and some have done that. The issue about 1 billion rand, you read too much of newspapers, it's not true, so forget it. Well, then the issue of...
Mr. Self, I'll allow you to what do you call this thing? Howl at members, but you can't howl at visitors.
I don't mind, actually. No. If we have to exchange, we can share that.
No problem. That's what I don't want to happen, that we start getting howling across the floor.
That's fine. But then, Mr. Singh, we're basically saying 50-50 is too far, and the reasonable negotiation of a figure that parties can agree on, we're not opposed to that.
I'm not sure, 10% more, whatever, I don't know. But the question is, I'm saying that's a bridge too far, but negotiation on something reasonable, that's how the matter was approached, and I'm saying let's talk about it from that angle. I would say no, no, but I'm saying don't create an impression that there's something wrong with the formula simply because the parties wish to get a bit more. I think let's just negotiate it. Then those parties that are not represented, or you raised the issue about party investment. I try to make a very careful distinction, and I'm saying I put the legislation and those legislative instruments are going to hammer the parties. Doesn't matter what we say. So we need to know that whether you agree with the ANC or not, those are already affecting anyone who seems to be associated with political position. So we must face that. But secondly, then I say endowment funds or blind trust and so on. So I'm saying that we need to look at a formula that can allow us to be able to use genuine investment so that you don't compromise the parties, but let's not dive into this space. It's going to be problematic now. The other one about parties that are not represented, I think it's difficult to tie up everything that relates to political parties outside parliament here, because here there's at least one formula that can tell you who has got support. The story about, I think it was raised by the Bishop's conference, who spoke about laptop parties, that's a reality. So I think we need to deal with that. I would imagine, again, some of the issues I raised do cover the point that was raised by Mr. Mulder. Effectively, the question of supporting democracy, we can't say because we're trying to negotiate and behave as though there was something undemocratic about the process. It's not undemocratic. But because we're saying we want to renegotiate it, that's fair. Let's talk about it in that kind of context. Honorable Dlamini, stop getting fixated about the ANC losing power. That's your imagination, that's leave it with you. Now, there's no such a thing as ANC having anonymous donations. There's no such. I'm telling you, I'm the Treasurer General. So don't make assumptions that don't exist. Did Guptas donate? Yes, they did. Right? Did they donate to the DA? Yes, they did. I don't know about you. You probably, I don't know. But you can never tell us who donated to you. You can't put all those names there. So don't behave as though, well,
Hold on, TG. I'm chairing this meeting. Can I ask, comrades, we've been appealing order now. We are going to have our own infighting amongst ourselves. Can we afford respect? We will have our fights. I mean, we've been consistent throughout with everybody else. So I'm just appealing. We might not like it, but I think it should be afforded that we hear them because they've heard us. And I'm not protecting TG or protecting Matthijs. I just don't want this mudslinging here.
Okay. So just to say, Honourable, it's not all of a sudden this. We've been through a number of court cases where we've been asked to do this precisely. So we're responding to that. But I want to also say to Honourable Member, it was going to catch up with us anyway. All the countries have had to face this. So if we don't see it now, we'll find it in the future. We will be we'll be caught up in that. If I were to open up onto the presentation, that gives you a comparative study of the restrictions that have come from a number of countries. Now, have a look at that bar that is shaded. That is South Africa. It's got one, two ticks that you've got. If you look on the left at the various parameters that are being regulated by different countries in Africa and the world, and look at how many cluster of ticks that there are, and look at why we don't have anything there. So in reality, it says that we have looked at what's happening in the whole world, we will be caught up with this process, and so it's not something that's being done all of a sudden. And I think you need to be appreciative of that. And that we can also throw the whole question back to some of the parties. If the parties are concerned that there is too much money coming from the parties, coming from the fiscals going into political parties, can the parties go sit down and agree that scrap all this financing that goes to political parties and give it to the fiscals, back to the fiscals? Can we say that if we're not politicking? So the question here is about how do we balance these issues? The issue we're raising is that you need to regulate, be transparent, but you to do that, your trade-off is increased party funding. We didn't say the ANC is complaining about this. We're saying the ANC has been pushed into court several times to answer this issue as government and as a party, and we're saying we're responding to it because we don't think that the public fears on regulating this matter are ill-founded. They are genuine. That's why you see that kind of cluster. There are interesting literature about how these things have been abused in many countries. One of the books I like most is something called Democracy Unlimited, where they use peerage in the UK to actually make somebody a sir, so-and-so, and then they pay, get money to pay for that. And when it was exposed, it became such an embarrassment thing. So we will get caught up with this thing anyway. Then that also answers Ms. Honorable Bongo about the comparison that we've done with the other parties. The issue of constitutionally interesting issue, Honorable Mathiesen, because actually the issue has always been a debate. It has never been proven in court. And because it's a debate, it has never really been taken through to a point where a constitutional court can rule on it. But at the same time, people keep questioning it, and we're simply saying to close that issue, let's make sure that the law covers it. It's not a sudden discovery. It's something that has been a debate. I was in the provincial leadership when this matter was raised, and we had a huge debate with DA and other parties about whether it's constitutional or not. It's the same thing. It went in Gauteng. It had exactly the same thing happened. But the point is, it's got nothing to do with the ANC losing power. It's about regularizing the process, and the ANC is not going to lose power. You'll be here, so you will know. Then the issue of investment arms doing business with government, I think we've raised that point. In a way, it's going to be a problem. I think we need to always avoid that. The corporate donations, there are two ways. Either the companies can decide on their own that they want to donate. Some have done that. And in some instances, the parties can approach them and ask them for donation, and therefore they'll take a decision. Usually it goes right up to the board, and the board can either say yes or no, and then it's up to them. There's no contradiction on the issue of personal funding, and the issue of funding individuals inside the party is not an ANC issue. It was raised here, and some of the members were not here when that question was raised. It was raised here, and I said that I'm responding to someone who raised the issue here. And this, the members were aware, and that's why we get involved in that. Of course, at the end of the day, what we've tabled here are more concerns around what has been raised in the public discourse. And we're saying we must meet the public halfway as political parties, agree to the fact that there's a degree of regulation needed, agree to the fact that the reasonable concern and distrust around the issues of corruption are not ill-founded. There are possibilities. We need to say to the party, to the public, look, this is what we're trying to do to make sure that you remain in charge of your policy-making processes in the political parties, and that there's no corruption associated with it, there's no state capture, there's no party capture, and that kind of thing. We can go into further figures in terms of what Honorable Masego and Kumede are asking about the capping. We can go into further proposals, that I won't go into that just now. But to say, as we speak here, we believe that this is a proactive offer to the public in terms of a discourse that has been out there. Okay, can I just allow a couple of minutes for my colleague to deal with the two issues, a couple of issues. Okay, we will deal with the next one. Thanks.
Right? As is common practice, honorable members, you all have one question as a follow-up. One question as a follow-up. And can I admit my failings as the chair? I allowed people to give us a long preamble and a political speech and then ask the question. Let me repeat, next week we're going to have our opportunity for that. Should you be recognized, can you just put the question to the submitters, and then we will incorporate all that in our discussions tomorrow. Not tomorrow, next week. Any takes? Kubisa? Gordy? Mateus, before you take that up. Dlamini, self, going once, going twice, gone. Prof. Kubisa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Kabandela, just one question. I would like that you share your views with regard to the issue of governance, management, and also some guidelines and criteria of accessing funds from the multi-party democracy funds. Just that.
Ngiyabonga baba, Chairperson of Scopa God.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. I have one question, 1A and 1B.
Because you've not participated the whole weekend, I'll allow you those things.
Thank you very much, Comrade. I want to follow up on the question that Singh raised around the sharing, you know, with the proportional part as well as what is called the equitable share. And I think what Singh raised was much more at the level of degree. Is it 10-90? Is it 50-50? Is it 70-30? But I want to check at a much more substantive level for the ANC. My sense, and it's something that I'm a bit hesitant to say I'm absolutely certain, is that the what is called equitable share actually is provincial share, meaning that if a party like the APC does not have a member in the provincial legislature, he does not get anything from what is called equitable share. So if we are going to debate and discuss change, it might as well be that it will not only be moving from 9 to 10, but to substantively say to what extent does it become equitable in relation to the proportional, the parties that are benefiting from the proportional. I just want to check whether, as the ANC, you are aware of that. If not, is it something that the comrades here will be given the green light to support? Because I would imagine that it will have implication in terms of the way money is being currently distributed. My 1B is in relation to foreign corporate. I don't know if you could just unpack that a bit. You know, I'm thinking here of situations where you have countries where parliaments set up institutes or trusts that go around in Africa conducting workshops and training for political parties and funding them for this and that, especially those who are not necessarily in the ruling party, whether that is also included or was that considered, or in cases where you find that political parties have trusts or institutes of their own, and through those they fund political activities in various countries, because, well, maybe they'll say this is not directly coming from the party, but it's an arm that stands aside from the party but gets funded by parliament to that particular party to expand its work beyond the borders of that country. Thank you, Comrade Chair.
Thanks, Chief. Honorable Mateus.
Thank you, Chair. The requesting an increase of public funding is a very different issue versus transparency. So we were raising the issue on why are we requesting an increase from the fiscus. So I don't know how that is related to the issue of transparency, because we already agreed on 100% transparency. And also, just to emphasize, you didn't answer my question on corporate financing, to what extent corporates or do we need to understand what corporates, who they have decided to fund and how they lead to that decision who to fund? For example, Standard Bank, they fund, I think they fund all political parties. BFF, we haven't taken their funding because, you know, we don't want to get involved in those sorts of things. But just for you to speak to that about how corporates come to that decision, what's the ANC position on that?
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks, Mr. Mkhize, for finally agreeing on what most of you have denied, that you have taken money from the Gupta as the ANC, because most of you in your pledges have denied. But thanks for clarifying that to the country that, yes, we have taken money of the Gupta, they are funded by them. The issue I want to get clarity in the issue of the investment companies. Does ANC have an investment company, and does it just state, does it just work with the state? And which entities does the ANC investment companies, either Chancellor House, Hitachi, all those things, do they have state contracts that are currently running as we speak? Thank you.
Leave him. Don't. You protect it on the boat. I mean, I'm saying I'm protecting you for my comrades. No. Yabona. No. Honourable Self, you're the last.
Thank you, Chair. I do accept that the issue of the abuse of state resources is a separate issue from party funding. But in point of fact, they are coupled at the totes, if you could use a racing expression. And all I'm asking from the ANC as a political organisation and the ruling party is a commitment that that matter will be dealt with as well as part of this reform.
Yep, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, what you called this place. You will see that on the table that's on the screen there, that there's a line which says use of state resources. And in most countries, in most jurisdictions, there is a regulation dealing with the matter of use of state resources for party political activities and particularly for election campaigns. And so that's a matter that should be dealt with. I think what you're trying to do as Parliament in this exercise is to improve on what is already a relatively good democratic system that we've got. And the weak link that we have is the funding of political parties. That chart there, which looks at a whole number of jurisdictions, it deals with some of the what people call for want of a better term, advanced democracies like United States, UK, Sweden, etc., but then it also deals with, and a majority of those are developing countries. Because some people have argued for developing and poor country exceptionalism when it comes to democratic practice. And the South African Constitution was very clear about it at the time of the adoption of the Constitution, that there is no developing country exceptionalism when it comes to democracy and when it comes to fundamental human rights at the time. And so here again, hopefully that the envisaged legislation will not do that as such. And therefore, the question of state resources should be very clearly regulated. And those who are in power in a province or a metro or national government departments clearly could do that in surreptitious manners, and it would be unfair. That's the one thing. The second thing to mention is the question of increased state funding. Now, you'll see a line there that it says under the heading public funding, that chart, provision of direct public funding to political parties. And you'll see that almost most of the countries have provisions for that. And the reason for that is either you're going to have the state funding political parties in a material way, or political parties
being dependent on private donors. And not many private donors are altruistic. And certainly when it comes to the private sector and the corporate world, there's limited altruism. You know, they would be funding a political party because they see some other gain. That is what it is. It's not, you may not know, but when I left you guys in 2004, I've been in the private sector, you know, boots and all up to my neck, and I can tell you there's no altruism as far as that is concerned. You find interest, you know, people find interest as such. It doesn't mean it's illegal or bad. And so I think that's the other thing that has to be there. And that's the reason why increased state funding is, I think there's a case for it. But it should be limited. Because in most jurisdictions, there's a limit on what parties can spend on an election campaign. In South Africa, the ANC or the DA can spend any amount of money, and it's huge sums attributed to some political parties, as to what is spent in an election campaign. But it's not limited on it. But in almost every other jurisdiction, they say you may not spend more than X on an election campaign. And the reason for that is that in the modern world, if a party puts an enormous amount of money, it's going to distort its outcome at the end of the day. It's a bit, not exactly, but something like buying votes. So that's what you want to be able to avoid also. And that's why the public funding becomes important, but I don't think it should be enormous as such. As far as foreign corporates are concerned, the whole issue of foreign funding is one which in almost every jurisdiction, it's a very, very important issue. And here we must distinguish between NGOs, religious organizations, and political parties. I have a very active life in NGOs, and I chair one of the largest environmental NGOs in South Africa, and many NGOs receive money from overseas of one sort or another for a variety of reasons. They may be part of networks, they may not be able to raise money here, etc., etc., and so do religious organizations. That must not only be condoned, it must be encouraged. It's a good thing. But political parties are different. What you as political parties do is that you make laws for South Africans. And it is probably not the right thing if you get paid by people who are not going to be affected by the laws which you make. So, you know, if you get paid by sources from outside the country and they fund you, but you're making laws not for them, but for us, it's not the right thing. And I think the president of ASAPO put it very eloquently, better than I can, that it's something, the sovereignty needs to be taken into account. And therefore, if there is to be international funding, that's got to be circumscribed in a proper sort of way. And I'm not saying there shouldn't be. I think KSEC has got some ideas about how it can be, and I think the Treasurer General has also made some suggestions as far as that is concerned. The final point, as far as the governance of this is concerned, I'm interested in listening to what the IEC says tomorrow personally. I've been looking at this issue for more than 20 years. In fact, I've been waiting for 20 years for this point where somebody would start taking this very seriously. The IEC probably is the right vehicle. The laws may not allow them to do it, or they may not have the capacity, or it may be unwise, and you may need to set up additional bureaucracy to do this sort of thing. So I think that's a bit of an open question. Just the final point that I'd like to make, Chair, is that what you're dealing with here is really a matter that should have been dealt with in the South African Constitution. It's work that was not completed then. Now, I spent 9 years of my life in the Constitution, 1992 to 1994, in the multi-party negotiations and up to 1999 as Minister for Constitutional Development. At the time when I was Minister, we did enormous amount of research on this matter, but political parties were not interested in it. We're not interested in having funding regulated, just about almost all of them. And so it wasn't done.
And maybe just as well, because we now have the experience of about 20 years to see what can go wrong, so that, you know, it's not completely in the abstract that one would be doing this. For example, the 90-10 thing is being questioned by a lot of people. Maybe that needs a bit more discussion, a bit more debate. I think it won't be easy to come up with a new formula, but it's quite clearly something that, you know, the smaller parties may want to discuss as such. And because it's of a constitutional nature, you have the unfortunate task of looking into the future and not doing legislation for the 2019 elections or for the current problems that one or other party may be having internally or with other parties and those sorts of things. And you're going to have to look at what's good for the future as such. And I just hope that it's possible to do that. I know, you know, robust party politics is, that's what it is. But we really owe it to South Africans that we close this one weak link in the chain that holds together an otherwise very good democracy. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to all the members for the discussion. I think the answer to Honourable Self is clear. Rather than asking us the question, because we have given the answer, possibly you table a proposal and let's engage on that, because your issue is, where is the issue of abuse of state resources in our document in the context of what needs to be done there? I think you table a proposal. Basically, when it comes to that issue, you are not going to find divergence of views. The question is going to have to be, how do we make sure it is stopped? Not so much whether there's a party that's got a policy of abusing state resources. We don't have that as a policy of the ANC. The other aspect is to deal with Honorable Dlamini. Your question about the Guptas, I think it should please you to know that there's a tiny, kind of insignificant amount that came to the ANC. So when you say funded, I hope you understand what you mean, because in this case, it doesn't mean the ANC, there's not even a single donor who can actually claim to control the ANC by virtue of their donations. In this case, it's a tiny donation that came through, and we will not accept a donation that we can't accept publicly. If we can't agree publicly we have received the donation, then we don't take it. You must just understand that as one of the fairness with which we deal with the issue of donation. The issue of investment, party investment companies, is an evolutionary process. There were times when Walter Sisulu, Titi Ngobe, and a lot of other were directors of companies that were formed. Over a period, all of the thing was done away with. So you will not find a party where a company where the ANC owns shares, runs, is a director, has got any direct responsibility. We don't have that. You have now parties that we have companies that may donate to the ANC, or others which were formed and have got nothing, don't even donate to the ANC. So the whole history there. So if we understand this. When it comes to the issue of the Chancellor House matter you are raising, it's a matter that was debated quite openly here, because it related to the Hitachi contract. In fact, that contract, the public protector, there were a number of companies that got involved in auditing the ESCOM thing to see whether there was any undue influence. It happened two times. If you need, I think we can actually summon ESCOM to give you all those details. So you can deal with that issue publicly so that you can put it behind us. And in fact, we raised this issue directly because I was arguing with the leaders of the DA to say, don't get excited. What the FCPA process did, it went to Hitachi and got Hitachi on their own notes and things they said, that's how they got fined. They couldn't come to anyone else, least of all the African National Congress. We were not comfortable in the matter, and the matter is clear, it's on the table, and go and demand the ESCOM to give you that entire file. You'll actually be impressed to see what was done in that process. So I'd like to put that behind us, and just to say, let us be very clear. When we say to political parties, let us be careful about party shareholding and direct party investment arms. We're talking from clear experience of things that we've actually seen are going to be problematic anyway. And it's got nothing to do whether it's DA or EFF that's want to do it. The legislation out there is going to be quite challenging for any parties to try and create a direct investment arm.
It's going to make it hell for those parties that are trying to do that. And this is just an open advice that we're sharing. And it's nothing to do with us now having a difficulty with fundraising. It's got nothing to do with that. In fact, insofar as the ANC's fundraising issues, we would have brought this issue here were it not because we are forced to respond to the matter because it's engaging you know, publicly and it's been in court and so on. It's not because we're trying to find a way out here. We've not had a problem. As you can hear Mr. Vali Musa talking about parties were not interested. But we are saying this matter is catching up with us. There's no point in us avoiding it. Let's face it up, face up to it and deal with it. The issue of EFF not taking their donation from Standard Bank, okay, that's a party's decision. We've got nothing to do with it, and I don't think I want to comment on it, except that, you know, there are only two sources of funding in this country, or maybe three. You can either get money from the fiscus, which is what we're talking about, or you can get it from individual who might be your members or supporters, or you get it from some form of business or another. And if you don't take it from business, that's up to you. If the party is adequate, then that's okay. I don't think we want to get entangled in that. The issue that's being raised around corporate funding, I think, has been answered by Comrade Musa, as it were. The concern that's coming from Honorable Godi, I understand it slightly differently. What we're saying is that the legislation that we're working on must regulate both national and provincial in terms of the legal framework. Whether the funds will come from the provincial budget or from the national budget is not our issue as we speak. We're simply talking about the law must provide what happens. So that is one issue. The second issue which you are raising is a bit of a difficult one for me to answer because if the question is, this legislation will allow people to get, will allow parties to get funding at a national level and in the provinces where they are not represented then they get nothing. The question is whether should they get something there because they are obviously not players. And that issue the parties can discuss. As far as I can see, what is most important is we have a framework that makes it clear how the two relate. You might want to create a formula that operates at a national and provincial level, and therefore that's how you guide the process of allocation. You might want to have a situation where the allocations come from one point and then the parties do their own distribution, whatever. But at the end of the day, I think we leave that to the committee because all that we are saying is that we can see there's a lacuna in terms of party funding at a provincial level. So what needs to be done is that it needs to be closed now so that the question of constitutionality never arises again. It's an issue that can be solved. Obviously, the question that all of you are raising is around the formula. Once again, I want to say, insofar as we will be concerned with the formula, we think that is something that can be negotiated as to what the exact figure will be. My point was just to respond that 50-50 is a bit way too high to settle, but you know, how far away from the 10 we can settle is something that can be discussed. But we want to deal with it. Let's just deal with it on a question of just persuading each other. Let's not take an approach that seems to suggest there's something wrong with the party that's getting, you know, proportionate 90%, because that's where things are. That's how it stands. It's not like someone is doing a criminal, you know, extraction out of the process. So let's face the fact that there are concerns, and obviously that's fine. It's a process of negotiating our way out of it. What is the best thing we can deal with it? I would say the issue of governance, colleagues, you might find that there might be a few players that might be necessary. IEC has you know, traditionally been involved in this, so the funds get voted into that fund, into IEC, so that IEC distributes. But it's possible that you could, for example, say that there might be a fund that gets set up, which is the right department to host it, so that everyone can go and put money there and be recorded at that level. I think it's something that we can again discuss. Should it be Treasury? I'm not sure. Should it be Parliament? But look, it's a matter of what we agree on. It's not so much that there's a law against or for it. So it's something that means that
it would be useful to encourage corporate donations of significant amounts going here so that we reduce the shyness of anyone who doesn't want to be seen, as it were. So I think we need to deal with that. Another member here, another presentation, talked about tax incentives. We would not be opposed to tax incentives, but we have actually pursued this matter. The issue of tax incentives here is a bit tricky in so far as organizations that are not-for-profit can have access to Section 18.1A of the Revenue Act, and therefore they can get exempted. When they get exempted, it's basically on the basis that they're doing charitable work, and any political party can register that interest, and there's no problem with that, except no party can get that exemption and still use money for party political partisan purposes. It's very difficult. You will not be able to do that. On the other hand, we've also interacted quite significantly with SARS. They would say, don't you worry, we will not tax the political parties. Whatever money you get as a donation, there's no tax associated, except those who give it to you will tax them. And that's another issue that may make it a bit of a challenge. However, if this is a central fund and there's a bit of an incentive there, it may help to increase the corporate donations, which therefore means it can alleviate the fiscal pressure in terms of the amount that we need to try and distribute to the party. So it's a matter of give and take. And when you sit with Treasury, it would be interesting to see what they've got to say. And from where I sit, Chairperson, the amounts that you might want to add on to additional amounts may not be, we may not be looking at huge amounts that would mean that you have to take this from that or that other party. I think it can be looked at on a sensitive basis, and it's a question of balancing the issues. There will certainly be a response of donors, a little bit of stage fright when the process starts, and so that's why I think the timing becomes important. But it's not about taking money and giving it to politicians. It's about supporting democracy. It's about saying that the voters are the ones who are in charge of all these political parties, and so that's the balance we're creating. But also, it's a give and take. For this, you must offer this and that and the other. We've approached it from that very, a constructive approach, Chairperson. Having said so, if there might be need to come back and add other issues, we'll keep following your processes with interest. But thank you very much for us. It's been a very interesting discussion. We from the ANC have been discussing this matter for the past 4 years, trying to say what is the best way to deal with this issue, and that's where we are. Thank you very much, Chair, honorable members.
Thanks very much, TG and your team. As we say to everybody, if there's something that you really want to give us, because you might have forgotten about it, you are free to write to Cindy and her team. And similarly, if there's something that we'd want further clarity on, we would do that. But again, to repeat to South Africans that there is going to be another opportunity to comment orally and to comment in writing once we've come up with what we call draft one. And that's probably another 30 days or so. So it's not the end of the road, but there certainly will be an opportunity for further comment once we have made available what the committee would have looked at as draft one. So thank you very much, TG and your team. That is the end of the process for, before I say that, Mr. Scott, has he arrived? No, he hasn't. And Mr. Gottschalk, have you arrived? No, they haven't. Therefore, that means that's the final presentation for today. I will come to you. In terms of presentations, that's the final presentation of today, honorable members. Maybe let's hear what Honorable Matthijs has to say, and then we will propose what's going to happen tomorrow and going forward.
Okay. The Scott presentation, I thought in the last meeting that we had that they didn't have time to make a submission. Or is it a different submission? And they were on some flight somewhere, and they, and now they're coming to submit. Okay, just clarify.
No, it's not. They have made their submission. What they did is they said to us last week that although they made the submission, they're not available to do the oral. But their written submission is in our file. The only thing that is different is that they haven't made themselves available for the oral, and Mr. Scott didn't indicate either way, but his submission is there. Having said that, honorable members, tomorrow we're then going to, from 2 o'clock, listen to the IEC and pose all these questions to the IEC. Honorable.
Thanks, Chair. I'm just checking why are we not starting at 10 tomorrow?
Honorable members, we agreed yesterday that we're making provision for caucuses. No, before you get there, we said we're making provision for caucuses. And because we accepted it, we didn't take the time as the backroom staff to find out from all political parties whether they're making. We just assumed that it's a caucus day. But if you want to change it and make it at 9 o'clock, again, we said we'll be driven by you. But the reason why we started at 2 o'clock was because we made provision for caucuses. But if you want to change it, me and the backroom team are more than willing. Honorable Milner, and then Honorable, on this point, so that I can get to the problem.
On this point, Chairperson, because we agreed to start at 2 o'clock tomorrow, I've got other appointments during the course of the morning. I will not be able to attend before 2 o'clock.
All right. We're not going to make an issue of it. It's column or 2 o'clock. Honorable members, tomorrow we're going to get the IEC at 2. All these questions about their capacity, the advisability and so on, we'll raise with them at 2. On Friday, and I'm looking at people like Kubisa, Godi, others that were otherwise occupied, I think it's going to be important that she hear on Friday. Because on Friday, it's going to be the committee that's going to start its discussions. Whereas now there was everybody. But on Friday we're going to sit and chart the way towards the first draft. You'll recall that you said you want a political discussion where we'll swear and shout and kick each other, not physically. And then when we come back on Tuesday, you will have before you a piece of paper which hopefully will have all the content in terms of what we want as part of the first draft before we send it to the legal team, who have 3 weeks to do whatever they need to do, and then that takes us towards the end of September, I think, by the time it's gone through the process. So corporate South Africa towards the end of September will get the first sighting of draft one. We'll go through the process. There will be another opportunity for corporate South Africa to internalize draft one, make oral submissions and written submissions, and eventually towards the end of October, we will sit and do what we call the draft bill that we will send to the National Assembly. We're still committed to the 30th of November, where we will present our report to the National Assembly, and the National Assembly will either adopt, reject, and do whatever they need to do. So that's the process broadly, honorable members, going from here. So next week is really in-house business. And once we're done with that, then we have a 3-week break and come back. Every South African will be allowed, even if they didn't give us written or oral submission, to continue to give us advice and their wisdom until we've come up with draft one. And the only way you can do it now is because we're done with oral and written submissions in the formal sense. Is there nothing wrong with you drafting a letter or a one-pager to Cindy? We will make it available, and as we debate, we will either incorporate it or process it. At some point, we're going to say to you that's the end when we get to draft one. So thank you very much to honorable members, honorable Matthijs, and honorable... Okay. yes, Women's Month. We'll take Matthijs first and sing later on. Matthijs and
not just on Women's Month.
No, but
I'm making it Women's Month. We do 365 days of the year. Chair, on that point about Corporate South Africa submitting, and I think one of the other submissions we got last week, I'm proposing that we actually write as a committee, maybe to the JFC, and ask them to come here and give some submissions in terms of corporate funding, and so we can also interrogate them in terms of why some companies want to fund and who doesn't want to fund, and those sorts of issues. And I say the JFC in particular because that's where the multinational companies are and they're listed, and that's where bulk of funding is. So I think I'm suggesting that we do that. Thank
you. There is organized business somewhere that I think incorporates most JFC companies. So we'll write to BUSA, Business South Africa, everybody. South Africans are listening to us. Nobody is prevented from sending it to us. But let's ask the corporate world to do it. I'm not going to go out there and recruit or beg the corporate world one by one, but we are giving an open invitation. All South Africans in the corporate space, please come to the party. Honorable Singh.
Yeah, Chairperson, my understanding is when you use the term corporate South Africa, was any South African. But now if you want to hone it down to emphasize corporate, then fine, I've got no problem with that. But I think any South African can make submissions. I might have missed this morning because I was not here about Black First, Land First. How are we going to deal with them?
No, Todd, he's speaking to the chair. No, no, they did write to us. We have made it. All right. Can we ask members to remain behind so that I answer it, because I think it'll be unfair for them to get it in the on the media before we've sent a letter. But let me share it with you rather than for them to say, but you spoke to South Africa, so we'll deal with that one. If we stay, it's gonna be a 2-minute exercise, if that's okay with you. Then, honourable members, this meeting is suspended until 2 o'clock tomorrow morning. To everybody that has been here, thank you very much.
Afternoon. So, not tomorrow morning, tomorrow afternoon.
Tomorrow afternoon at 2, yes. Venue, thank you very much.
No.